Today we're diving into 14 horrible number one songs from the 1970s. The tunes that make you wonder, how on earth did this get so popular? But it was the 1970s, the decade of bell bottoms, disco balls, and some of the best music ever made. But let's not kid ourselves, even in this platinum certified golden age of rock and roll, some real stinkers somehow clawed their way to the top of the charts. But there's more than one way to be a horrible number one hit. Welcome, I am your host, Nostalgic Nick. And these are the songs that had us not bobbing our heads so much as scratching our heads, rolling our eyes, and sometimes even changing the station. You Light Up My Life, Debbie Boone, 1977.
You light up my life.
Alright, we're starting with a real perplexing one, because this song held the number one spot for a jaw-dropping 10 weeks. 10 weeks. That's like a lifetime in radio years. Written by Joe Brooks, it was supposed to be the theme for a movie of the same name. And boy, do I not want to watch that film. Because the song has all the emotional pull of a Hallmark card, drenched in syrup, sprinkled with sugar, and rolled up like cookie dough. And Debbie Boone's earnest delivery was sugary sweet. It felt like your teeth would just rot listening to it.
You give me hope.
And yet, people could not get enough of it. Critics have argued that it was the anthem for a year that desperately needed hope, but others say it was just overplayed into oblivion. But what's even stranger is Boone's later revelation that she sang it as a love song to God. But hey, that's great and all, but did anyone know that at the time? The spiritual undertone wasn't obvious, and most people assumed it was just about romance. Hey, either way, it became a cultural juggernaut, possibly because it was the polar opposite of gritty realism, like in films like Saturday Night Fever. Sentimental, yes. Boring, oh, absolutely. But the tune was undeniably catchy, but with hindsight, it's pretty much a symbol of everything overly earnest about late 70s pop. My Ding-a-Ling, Chuck Berry, 1972.
Every time that bell would ring, catch me playing with my ding-a-ling-a-ling.
The king himself, Chuck Berry, the father of rock and roll, gave us classics like Johnny Be Good and Roll Over Beethoven. So how did this novelty song about, well, you know, become his only number one hit? Written by Dave Bartholomew, it was originally a harmless little ditty about a bell. But when Chuck got his hands on it, the innuendo turned up to 11. Imagine being in a crowd in 1972, hearing Berry croon about his dick. While everyone laughed like kids in a schoolyard, juvenile humor at its finest. Or maybe its worst, depending on your tolerance for repeated ding-a-ling jokes. But then you remember, this reigned at the top of the charts. Wow.
It was my ding-a-ling-a-ling-o.
Ding-a-ling.
I think this one's especially baffling considering Berry's got an incredible catalog of songs that honestly defined rock music. Yet, here we are, with My Ding-a-Ling. I mean, that's his chart-topping legacy. You really can't choose what people remember you by, huh? While I have your attention, though, there is this one Mamas and the Papas video which I really love, and that's how I want you to remember me by. Anywho, audiences at the time might have thought it was hilarious, but let's be honest, this was no Maybelline. It's hard to imagine parents in 1972 awkwardly dodging their kids' questions about why the grown-ups were laughing so hard at the radio. It is the ultimate head-scratcher in Berry's otherwise legendary career. And looking back, it feels like a musical anomaly, like a joke that went way too far but somehow worked in the moment. It's charming in its ridiculousness, but it remains a peculiar footnote in Chuck Berry's towering legacy. Feelings by Morris Albert, 1975.
Feelings.
Oh, feelings. Even saying the title feels like a melodramatic sigh. Brazilian singer-songwriter Morris Albert unleashed this song on the world in 1975, and it quickly became the go-to anthem for soap opera-worthy breakups. The melody, sure, it's pretty, but the lyrics, it's like Albert ran out of words halfway through and decided to repeat the ones he'd already said. Despite its blandness, the song struck a chord, perhaps because people were eager to indulge in its melodrama. I mean, we all know the absolute soul-crushing, heart-shattering agony of a bad breakup. When we have to give up on love forever and resolve to live a life of unloved solitude full of cold winters and lonely summers. And, Okay, yeah, no, I do get it. I do get it. Point made, Mr. Albert. Weirdly, it also became a wedding singer staple, a karaoke go-to, and pretty much the bane of anyone who wasn't in the mood for an emotional wallow. Even Frank Sinatra reportedly hated covering it, and supposedly called it the worst song I've ever heard. You bet your britches old Blue Eyes was onto something. And someone else was not a huge fan of this 70s sensation either. French artist, pardon my pronunciation, Louis Gastet. Louis sued Albert for copyright infringement, claiming Albert stole the tune from the 1957 song, Pour Toi.
Pour toi, feelings.
Get this, Louis won. Not exactly a squeaky clean legacy for this chart topper. But does that also mean we've got Louis Gastet to thank, or should I say to blame, for feelings? Okay, I will admit it, for all its fault, there is something almost hypnotic about its simplicity. It's the musical equivalent of staring at a lava lamp. Not exactly thrilling, but oddly mesmerizing. And love it or hate it, Feelings remains one of the most infamous ballads of the 1970s. Seasons in the Sun, Terry Jacks, 1974.
We had joy, we had fun, we had seasons in the sun.
This one is a real head-scratcher, adapted from a French song by Jacques Brel. The English version was written by Rod McEwen and performed by Terry Jacks. It's a maudlin farewell to life, and while it's meant to be poignant, it's more like being hit over the head with a sadness hammer. The repetitive chords and syrupy delivery did not help either. It's like the musical equivalent of staring out a rainy window for hours. Aww. What's wild is how popular it was. This wasn't just a hit, it was a global sensation. Maybe people were just really into crying back in 1974, and apparently again in 1999. When Irish boy band Westlife did a cover and it topped a very specific list in the UK called Christmas Number One. Basically songs that topped the chart the same week as Christmas Day. Alright, yeah, I can dig that. We always need more lists that involve Christmas.
You would always come around and get my feet back on the ground. Goodbye, Michelle, it's hard to die.
But as far as the song goes, it's hard to say whether its success came from its catchy chorus or the collective mood at the time. But either way, it's a song that manages to be both unforgettable and utterly depressing at the same time. Adding to the irony, Jax wasn't even the first choice to record it. Yep, the Beach Boys were approached but turned it down. Maybe they saw the tear-soaked writing on the wall. Still, Terry Jacks took it and made it his own, cementing its place as one of the most bittersweet songs of the decade. Afternoon Delight, Starland Vocal Band, 1976. This one's infamous for being a little too cheeky for its own good. It's about, well, enjoying some quality time with your partner during daylight hours. The harmony's second to none, but the lyrics were so on the nose they might as well have come from a wink and a nudge. It's campy now, but back then, it felt like every mom and dad's favorite naughty little secret song. Which of course, if you were growing up in the 70s, was always worthy of a big eye roll from your parents being embarrassing. Hey, it was our God-given right to cringe at mom and dad being sappy. Ew, gross. Like I said, the song's popularity was fueled by its catchy chorus and smooth harmonies, but it's one of those tracks that has not aged well.
Started out this morning feeling so full, I always thought a fish could not be caught, it didn't fight.
Listening to it now feels like being in on a joke that was maybe a little too obvious. Still, it's a reminder that even the 70s had their playful, slightly scandalous side, and really, it's pretty much a product of its time. We were still kind of stretching our wings, putting feelers out, getting a feel for more liberating, envelope-pushing ideas and concepts. From TV to movies to music, to just the whole counterculture, standing-out kind of movement. Speaking of, let's not forget its role in pop culture, from parody sketches to movie references. Afternoon Delight seriously has now taken on a life of its own. Tie a yellow ribbon round the old oak tree, Tony Orlando and Dawn, 1973.
Tie a yellow ribbon round the old oak tree.
Now, if you were tuning into the radio in 1973, chances are this song was stuck in your head for days. No, make that weeks. I remember as soon as I was free of that earworm, somebody around me would hum it or sing it, and boom, back to square one. Tie a Yellow Ribbon Round the Old Oak Tree hit number one that year and became a real staple of early 70s pop. The song tells the story of a man returning home from prison, hoping his love still wants him. If she does, he says to tie a yellow ribbon around an old oak tree. Simple, right? But when you hear that dramatic, swelling chorus, you can't help but feel the emotion pouring out. And let me tell you, if you didn't live through the 70s, radio loved it. It played it all the time, and you couldn't go anywhere without hearing it.
A simple yellow ribbon, what I need, set me free.
You know how distance makes the heart grow fonder? Yeah, radio DJs, you hear me? Well, the same concept works for songs. What's crazy about this song, looking back, is how sentimental it is, almost to the point of being too much. I said earlier that some edgy songs were products of their time, and the same goes for the sugary sweet ones. A little Scandal to feel alive, and a little sappiness to define the 70s as the era of bold romance. The smooth vocals of Tony Orlando and the harmonies from Dawn made it sound so earnest and genuine, even though the whole concept is a bit over the top when you think about it. Yet, it captured that longing for reassurance that was so common in the early 70s. People were craving love and hope during those uncertain times. And let's be real, that Tie a Yellow Ribbon part, it was just catchy enough to stick with you no matter how many times you heard it, like 1,000. It doesn't help that in the grand scheme of 70s music, this one's a bit of an oddball. You had rock dominating the scene, you had the Rolling Stones and Led Zeppelin, and then you had this song. It's a pop gem, it's simple, it's sweet, and a little overdramatic, but that's what made it so unforgettable. It tapped into something, something universal. The desire to be accepted and loved, whether it was your grandma humming it while she worked in the kitchen, or you singing along with your friends in the car. This track became part of the fabric of the time, and honestly, even though it might be a little corny now, it still gives off those warm, fuzzy vibes when it comes on.
100 yellow ribbons around the old tree.
Billy Don't Be a Hero, Bo Donaldson and the Haywards, 1974. Billy Don't Be a Hero was one of those songs that just seemed to be everywhere in 1974. It's a catchy tune, but man, is it heavy on the drama.
Billy, don't be a hero, don't be a fool if you lie.
The song tells the story of a girl begging her boyfriend not to be a hero and go off to war, which really hits hard when you remember the kind of year it was. This was the tail end of the Vietnam War, and the mood in America was a little uneasy, to just barely scratch the surface of all the emotions we were going through. But in part, that meant people were done with war stories, and this song, with its poppy melody, almost felt like it was offering an escape from the real world. Even though the theme itself was actually really grim, and the very stuff we all needed a breather from. Yeah, I know, it's a bit hard to make sense of, but hear me out. The sound itself, classic 70s pop, with a little bit of soft rock edge. It's the kind of track you could imagine hearing while you're hanging out with friends, cruising in your car, or maybe even sitting around at the mall. Bo Donaldson's voice is full of earnestness, but the way the song deals with the serious issue of war and relationships is almost too, well, it's melodramatic. And it's also a bit oversimplified and romanticized, if that makes any sense. The same way some storytellers use and mishandle different struggles for dramatic effect without any real substance. It's got this overly sweet, almost juvenile quality to it that made you feel like you were listening to a schoolyard tale. But one with really grown-up consequences. That's the magic of pop in the 70s, though. Now, what's truly wild is that despite the song's somewhat ridiculous premise, it was a massive hit. It reached number one on the charts, and for a while you couldn't avoid hearing it on the radio. It was part of the post-Vietnam era, a time when many were questioning the country's choices and yearning for peace. Yet, it still became a catchy anthem, and looking back, it's almost hard to believe how this dramatic little ditty got so much love. But hey, that's just how the 70s work. Muskrat Love, Captain Antoniel, 1976.
Muskrat, muskrat, candlelight.
Hey, let's get weird for a second, shall we? Well, weirder. This is 70s music after all. Muskrat Love by Captain Antoniel is one of those songs that makes you scratch your head, even if you were around when it first came out. Released in 76, this track is exactly what it sounds like, a love song about muskrats. Yep, muskrats. Captain and Tennille were already riding high with hits like Love Will Keep Us Together, but this one was a whole different animal, pun intended. The soft, mellow vibe of the track matched the easygoing sound of the 70s, but the lyrics, well, they were so, so strange.
Muskrat Sam, to the jitterbug at Muskrat Land.
I've looked around, and it doesn't look like anyone was pulling a Jefferson Airplane and wrote these lyrics while on every substance known to man. Nope, that just came from the old noggin. I'm not sure which is more remarkable. The song was originally by the band America, but it was Captain and Tennille's version that took it to the top of the charts. with that soothing, soft pop sound that was all the rage at the time, they turned the weirdest song ever into a number one hit. The pairing of their smooth vocals with that upbeat, almost hypnotic rhythm made it a quirky anthem. And let's face it, people absolutely loved it. It was fun, it was catchy, and just bizarre enough to make you want to sing along.
Nibbling on bacon, chewing on cheese.
The fact that the song is about muskrats in love, well, it just made it all the more memorable. Even if I really wished I was singing about something cooler to match the great sound. Now, in hindsight, it's easy to laugh about how something so odd could dominate the charts. But hey, that's the charm of the 70s. The decade had a little bit of everything. You had rock, disco, soft pop, and then, out of nowhere, muskrats. You didn't have to make sense, you just had to make it catchy. And that is exactly what Captain and Tennille did. I think I'll quote Gary Buckley here, who said it best when he said, "It's a polarizing little number. After concerts, some people tell us they can't believe we didn't play it, while others go out of their way to thank us for not performing it." Yeah, I think that about sums it up.